This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora.
Kia ora nā koutou katoa toa. How are you going, Sean?
Me taki mātou. Very good, thank you. Happy Cook Islands Language Week. Yay! I had a really fun, interesting chat with local ceramic artist Jess Nicholson this week. We talked about a bunch of stuff. Jess's journey from law student through to ceramic artist and their shift down from around Wellington where they were studying. We talked about a bunch of stuff, their journey from law student through to ceramic artist and what they've been getting up to in Otipoti Dunedin. A few projects, Hunt for the Aurora, Te Tahu Nui Ārangi. That was a project in collaboration with the New Zealand International Science Festival and Poaka Matariki in collaboration with Te Kura Kaupapa and supported by DCC Arts Funding, a really cool project. Also discussed their time as the Castleberg Artist in Residence, the quality of mud and rocks out there in Broad Bay, and the difference between them making domestic ware and fine art. Or is there one?
Next week on Wednesday from 11 till 4, Sean and I will be at the Dunedin Community Gallery. If you want to pop in and have a chat about an idea you have for a creative arts project, community arts project, pop in and have a chat with us. We'll be there all day. And then there'll be a workshop presentation at 4 o'clock, and even if you can't make it, give us a bell and we'll be in touch about the September funding round. 4 projects after December 1st.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that and meeting new people and working out what's kind of brimming away in their minds creatively. Always exciting to hear about creative projects in Dunedin before they happen. Feel lucky in a lot of ways to get that inside scoop. So please do come down to the Dunedin Community Gallery next Wednesday. We'll be there. I'll put the kettle on. I'm joined today by Jess Nicholson, a local ceramicist, amongst other things. And we're here to discuss getting your hands dirty, making cool stuff. When did you arrive in Otipoti, Dunedin?
I just did the math about this. About 2.5 years, going on 3, came down in 2023, I came down.
Yeah, post-COVID.
Yeah.
COVID was like this kind of global paradigm shift, existential crisis for humanity, society. Was COVID a bit of a driving factor in you deciding to kind of relocate to Otipoti?
No, it wasn't. I mean, I had known for a couple of years that I wanted to come down here. I wanted to move down here to do at least 1 year of the art and design diploma at the art school here, because it's just this amazing purpose-built facility for ceramics. And although you can study that course in many locations throughout the country, here, you know, here in Otipoti is the centre. Is where everyone, the base of that course is located, and all of this equipment that I would never have been able to use otherwise is here.
Yeah.
And I consider that diploma a real kind of like, you know, a moment.
Someone told me you deviated from your academic pathway, that you were studying law or something like that. Am I right?
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about why you chose to go take a hard left.
Well, I got the paper. I did the whole thing. I got the degree.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I'll take some advice from you after this.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I've been out of the game for a while now. Well, yeah, so I did, went to law school. I was in Pōnekē to do that, did the whole thing, came out the other end and got my dream job. I was doing an internship at the Waitangi Tribunal.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, I was really stoked to be there, but I really struggled throughout university. It's just so competitive. And I don't know, I kind of guess I hoped that way of life and stress maybe was contained. I thought that maybe it could be contained within the university experience, but for me at least, it was not. And so to kind of come out the other end and still feel trapped in this like kind of, I don't know, rat race, for want of a better word. I just felt like I wasn't doing what I wanted to do in that area, because I really wanted to help people. After my internship finished, I just stopped.
Yeah.
I kind of needed to take some time to find find myself again. But, you know, like I was just so in it and there was no way out.
But also pretty brave, right? You're a young person. You've just paid a ton of money to get your qualification and you're like, hang on a second. Why do I still feel this way?
Yeah, why am I hating it?
Have I made the right choice?
Yeah.
And so that realization that maybe law, a profession in law, wasn't for you, turned you toward more creative pursuits. When did you take up ceramics?
So I had done like a beginner's pottery course during university. That was my mum's intervention. So I was, as I said, like quite unwell, I would say, throughout all of my university experience. And my mum, I guess, like got the vibe or knew, or maybe
your
I was.
Your mum mummed up on you.
Yeah, she mummed up on me and she was like, let's, you know, go do something fun. You know, she signed me and my brother up. So we would see each other once a week. We would go and do something together. And I found the course quite challenging, but I loved the actual practice and the craft. So I signed up to the pottery club in Wellington as soon as that finished. And yeah, honestly, like when my job was kind of taking me away from that and I was at work thinking, man, I'd rather be doing pottery, that's when it became clear that as soon as I stopped working, I should do that instead. And I was just doing it for fun, but it just became a routine. Like it was something that I just felt like I really slid into. It wasn't an intentional, like, you know, I didn't take a pottery course and think, I'm going to start a pottery business. I want to sell the stuff that I make. I did it because it felt good and it was really serving me. And at the same time, I think it was touching into parts of like what I did as a kid. I was quite a creative kid, but never did any art within the school systems. And, you know, working with this like, you know, literal earth material did make me think like, is there a bit more to this? You know, what else am I tapping into right now? Like, and that's when I kind of like started to really identify with my Māori taka and become really interested in where clay or uku fitted into not just te ao Māori, but my whakapapa as a takata kai tahu. And I got really annoying about it.
Beautiful. And in some ways was coming back down south, I guess.
It was a huge bonus.
Back to the Te Rangawaewae, a way for you to reconnect to your kaitahutaka.
Absolutely. The fact that the art school here in Otipoti is in Te Waipounamu, obviously, I thought this might be a huge opportunity to satisfy a lot of my wants and desires and curiosities. And I definitely have not been disappointed. It's been a really magical ride.
And to follow that deep call of your tupuna back down south is a really beautiful story, actually. Recently, you took part in a project called Te Tahu Nui Arangi, marking Puaka and the Southern Lights.
Aurora Australis.
Please science to me and tell me what it was all about.
Oh, science to you.
Well,
okay.
I know it's magnetic type things happening in the sky and it's a psychedelic slideshow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Through the Te Ao Māori prism, how was that interpreted by you into the project that you did recently?
Yeah, well, I was approached by the New Zealand International Science Festival. Basically, they more or less commissioned me to do a project and they wanted me to incorporate the Aurora Australis because of this solar maximum that came to a head earlier this year. Yeah, when they wanted me to sort of incorporate the Aurora Australis and art into this project, I thought, okay, well, I think we can go a bit further than that because it's one thing to meld, you know, art with science, but what about Pūrākau Māori art and science? Because for me, this was not something, I didn't know any Pūrākau around the Aurora Australis, but I thought it'd be a good opportunity to find out. And I thought if I didn't know, maybe other people didn't know either.
Probably right. Share a little bit of your knowledge with us.
There's lots of different kinds of understandings of what's happening in the night sky from a Te Ao Māori perspective. So Te Tahu Nui Arangi, I'm not sure exactly where in the country, which iwi sort of that ikua comes from, but it means the burning in the night sky. And my understanding is that that ikua relates back to a pūrākau about some explorers and navigators that instead of settling with the majority of us into Te Ika Māui and to Waipounamu, they continued a journey south towards Antarctica and they didn't come back. And so we don't know what happened to them. Oh. We can can make some pretty educated guesses that, you know,
they got very cold.
And when they were there, they lit campfires. And so the lights in the sky are their campfires being lit, not only to signal for help, but to remind us that we are part of something bigger, and also to remind us that we are navigators and explorers and brave, and that we, you know, like we follow the sky towards whatever we may find out there. And I just thought that was
beautiful.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another interpretation of the Aurora Australis is Ngā Kahukura or Hine Nui Te Pō. Sort of the reds is the kura, and that relates back to Hine Nui Te Pō, the goddess of, you could either say goddess of maybe death or the night sky. And her sort of whole history is super relevant for all Māori and can be interpreted in many, many ways. So yeah, there's just like a lot going on there.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
Huh? A cool project that kind of manifested, I guess, in plain speak as some type of, I think it's called a scavenger hunt and something I read about it, but reminded me of kind of geocaching or using waypoints to find the next piece of the puzzle. Is that right?
Yeah. So the reason I chose Te Tahu Nui Arangi for the project is because I thought of like, well, I thought about what could I actually do? What could I create? What could I facilitate? So I wanted to work with Māori artists, but I thought, what about like, what about tauira? What about tamariki? So I reached out to Te Kura Kaupapa Māori or Ōtu Pōti, worked with some of the kids there to just paint some small tiles, what they understand is happening in the night sky, or how they, well, I guess just their artistic interpretation and also the pūrako that they're thinking about and that they relate to. So all of that went onto these small tiles that, in collaboration with the Botanic Gardens, I just hid in a small area of the garden, and then we created a map with some clues. And so, again, because we went with Te Tahu Nui Arangi because of its sort of linkage to navigation and adventure, searching and finding. And so, yeah, we just did sort of like a treasure hunt in a way. There was no treasure at the end. It's just, you know, the treasure is the journey.
Oh, so cool. And so cool to get young, to get the tamariki involved in a project like that, I think is really, really nice.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I make a real effort. Maybe it's not that conscious, but I enjoy expanding the scope of people that I work and workshop and sort of facilitate and teach. Teaching has become, or sharing, I don't know, teaching seems like so authoritative, but sharing and facilitating, working with uku, clay, ceramic has become like a huge part of my life. I think I'm really motivated by other people.
Alongside all these amazing community projects you're involved with and raising up, you're also running a label, is that the right word? A brand, a business called Sick Ceramics.
What I first learned in pottery was domestic ware. That's like a really classic introduction, is working on the wheel, and so you're making a lot of cylindrical round forms, which will inevitably turn into mugs, bowls, plates and things like that. And honestly, I just got to a point where I had too many in my house. At first it was really small, and I just thought that my friends might give me a few dollars for something and basically help me clear space out. But there is something about the domestic space that I do feel very connected to, you know, like I guess to hark back to maybe COVID and things, like I've always spent a lot of time at home. It's always been my safe place. And I did still work with clay when I was at home, and I was doing so in my bedroom, which is really classic when you're still flatting and that's the only space you have in a shared house. And so that was kind of the first thing that I was doing with ceramics, was making domestic ware. And then everything else has really come from that. I still feel very connected to that domestic space.
Oh, I can see you're kind of managing multiple tensions between that practical kind of side of your craft versus, you know, you've had shows at the Blue Oyster Gallery and things like that. You're dealing in traditional Te Ao Māori practice and what you're doing. So you've got a few different kind of feathers in your cap there. Jess, is it? Do you find them competing with one another from time? You know, someone's like, just make me some cups. Jess, I don't want any of that other stuff. But like, what's how do you kind of manage those various strands of your creative practice?
Yeah, well, I think that they're becoming increasingly intertwined. Mm. So my domestic wear practice has definitely evolved to become, I believe that making these really practical things still really honours my whakapapa and te ao Māori in the sense that I'm incorporating, well, these days I'm very much incorporating local materials, whether it's local clay or crushed rocks into my glazes or even crushed up ceramic and sea glass off of the beaches around here. And so I still perceive that to be Māori because I'm still using all of these whenua materials and I'm moving. It's been a very long time since I made any domestic ware from clay straight out of a bag. Even if I am using commercial clays, I've recycled them. So I've taken them out of basically a clay rubbish bin and I've manually made it usable again, incorporating all of these scraps into a consistent texture. It's a craft in itself just to prepare these materials, to prepare that clay for use or to find the rocks, to find the glass, to find the ceramic on the beach. It makes me feel Māori to put that much effort and labour into it. Like, you think about all of the whakairo we used to do, how long it would have taken to make one piece. That's how I feel when I make a mug now. Mm. It takes a long time. It is inconvenient, but it's like a labour of love and it provides a certain level of knowing of those materials, which are always slightly different every time. Again, in my more art work, I'm using all of those same kind of glazes and processes, but I'm just expressing something slightly different. But I perceive that the domestic space and the feeling of home and the feeling of belonging and whakapapa is all of those strands braided into one thing. I think it's kind of all the same thing. Do you know what I mean?
That, Iho, is a fantastic answer and what I was looking for. Yeah, really special because a lot of people struggle with that that thing of, oh, I'm doing two things. How do they speak to one another? Is that taking away from that? Your practice tends to be self-amplifying in that you're using your knowledge, your materials, all kind of going into the same pot to produce either experimental art pieces or the cup I drink my coffee out of.
Mm.
Kia ora to that. You were the Castleberg Trust Creative Connections resident in 2025. I know there's some good uku around Broad Bay, some of that red stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Aye.
What did you do as part of that residency? And I imagine you trawled the coastline a little bit just going, wow.
Yeah, lots of wows. Mm. So that little section of Otipoti in Broad Bay where the seawall either doesn't exist, has never existed, or no longer exists, is one of the first places that I was taken when I arrived in this city. One of the first things I did, because I knew that I was going to want to explore these local materials, was get in touch with both of the Runaka, Katihuirapa ki Puketiraki and Otako, and I said, hi, it's me. Here's a little bit about me and this is what I'm looking to do. Could I please use your whenua? Would you be comfortable with me using your whenua? Is there someone who you could link me up with who might know something about maybe these materials? And Otako linked me up with Kitty Brown and she took me on just like a walk along the low tide line and I just could not believe it. And so once I learned about that residency and where the house was and that it had a studio attached to it, I was in there like swimwear, like big time. and so while I was there, I was really focused on trying to familiarise myself, get to know and make some pieces using as many of the local materials as possible. So, yep, some of that beautiful, really malleable, ready-to-use terracotta in Broad Bay I used on its own, incorporating some of that found glass and ceramic, which is just all through the harbour.
Particularly that little cove. I know exactly what you're talking about because I used to take walks there myself and pick up all sorts of kind of ceramic pieces. Some of it, you know, still intact. For some reason, a lot of it washes up in that particular spot with the red clay, which looks like a Martian landscape to anyone kind of walking past it for the first time. It is very unique.
Yeah.
geography.
Yeah. And so along with using that clay sort of on its own, I was mixing it with other clays, be it maybe a recycled clay mix or clay that I had collected a couple of years ago from Ben Ha. So it's just, you know, still pretty local, just down the road, I guess. Mm. And I incorporated that second clay to bring the firing temperature up, because I tend to work within the 1280 to 1300 degrees Celsius range. And I work in that range in order to melt rocks into glazes. And they're just like you said, it's like a Martian landscape around there. The rocks are so plentiful, so colourful. There's so much movement in the magma and the volcanic ash. Like, I was really fortunate enough to get to know Marshall Palmer from the geology department at Otago University, and he was instrumental in just giving me a little bit of understanding of what was kind of happening and how it happened around there.
Wow.
So I collected quite a few samples of rocks, and I'll be probably trying to understand and research and experiment with those rocks for years and years to come, because I don't have a science brain. I don't know any geology. I'm really like a muck around and find out kind of person. Like, I could read a book, but I won't read a book. I'm just going to play.
Incredible. You've brought a little box in with you. I'm so curious to know what's inside of it. Shall we have a look?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure whether I was going to sort of do a little bit of work
while we talked. No,
yeah.
I'm into it.
So I've just got this small polystyrene container. It's,
these are some tools of the trade.
Some tools of the trade, super fancy. This one is three barbecue skewers taped together. It's what I use to score my mahi when I'm attaching
highly technical
clay to clay. Very technical, very technical stuff. So I've just got a couple of bowls that I prepared earlier. It's a recycled clay mix that is just chocolate. It kind of looks like a chocolate chip cookie mix. Really, really chunky bits of clay and ceramic in there that are going to really burst through as the clay is fired. And these are just some bowls that I am going to cover in spikes, because that's what you need on a bowl.
What's next on the horizon for you?
For me, well, I've just moved into my first ever studio that I'm sharing with a friend from art school. We're up in the King Edward Court building, which used to be a polytech, which is funny. I just can't get away from the polytech here. And we're in a really, really amazing space, and it's pretty much all set up now. I'll be looking to do some workshops there, some one-on-one throwing classes, sort of alongside the pottery course that I already teach at the Otago Potters Group. So stay tuned for that if you want to do some learning with me.
I really look forward to seeing what you're up to in the near future, Jess Nicholson.
Kia ora.
Kia ora. You can check out our other shows at oar.org.nz. Click on the podcast tab and you'll find previous episodes of Aratoi on Air.
In a fortnight, we'll be coming back with a few conversations, one from community coordinator, events coordinator, creative and all-round legend, Lalo Fiso. And we'll also be talking to one of the three people behind Dankfest, which is a punk music festival that's happening at the end of this month. That should be great.
If you have any questions about your creative practice or projects that you might have coming up, please drop us a line. We'd love to hear all about that.
Thanks for taking the time to come and listen. And thanks again to Jess for their time today and all the guests that we've had thus far. It's really been a privilege. We'll see you in a fortnight.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.